And I'm speaking with General Hunt.
Vietnam, I think he was, as I recall, we exchanged material with the school at Fort Bragg, and I think he was running that school.
Right. The military assistance advisory program?
I think he just came over to kind of coordinate what they could provide us with.
When did you, when were you first assigned to the Phoenix Directorate? Do you remember the dates?
I can tell you approximately. It was probably in July or August of 1970.
And what kind of post did you have at that time? Position where, what were you doing before you were assigned?
I came out of the Grand General Staff College. Spent a year there.
And what did you know about Phoenix when you first got assigned to it? What was the
absolutely nothing. I might have read something about it in the news media, but other beyond that, I knew absolutely nothing.
Were you due for a Vietnam assignment?
Yes.
Or had you volunteered?
No,
for
I was due. I kind of expected to go to Vietnam from the Grand General Staff College.
Did you expect to be a military intelligence S2 with a line outfit or something like that?
No, most of my background was in signals intelligence, and I expected probably to get a job at something related to
that. Okay, so then Phoenix came as kind of a surprise?
Yeah, I don't know if surprise is the right word, but yeah, I did not expect to go to Phoenix.
Because Phoenix is kind of unusual program anyway.
Yeah.
Did you have any background in training?
Not a whole lot. Like I say, most of my background had been in SIGINT.
Okay.
I say I had no background. I had a lot of peripheral background. I had no significant background in the human intelligence or the human skills, as a discipline.
Does SIGINT play a role in Phoenix operations?
If any, very insignificant. Now, I can't say that some of the other organizations have contributed.
Because that's something that was of interest to me, whether Army Security Agency was doing radio monitoring and then feeding information into the Phoenix Directorate.
No, I absolutely not to my knowledge. If there was anything that related to that, it had to be outside of our channels. It would have been an indirect kind of thing.
Okay. Who did you get the assignment in Washington?
No, after I got to Vietnam.
You got to Vietnam. Okay, that's very usual, is that people get to Vietnam and then they get assigned to Phoenix.
You got to go into a replacement, and then they look around, see what's available.
This is rather bizarre, with the one branch of the executive is saying the other.
There you met John Mason or something like that? Is that how the process worked?
Not exactly.
And I'm speaking with General Hunt.
Vietnam, I think he was, as I recall, we exchanged material with the school at Fort Bragg, and I think he was running that school.
Right. The military assistance advisory program?
I think he just came over to kind of coordinate what they could provide us with.
When did you, when were you first assigned to the Phoenix Directorate? Do you remember the dates?
I can tell you approximately. It was probably in July or August of 1970.
And what kind of post did you have at that time? Position where... What were you doing before you were assigned?
I came out of the Grand General Staff College. Spent a year there.
And what did you know about Phoenix when you first got assigned to it? What was the
absolutely nothing. I might have read something about it in the news media, but other beyond that, I knew absolutely nothing.
Were you due for a Vietnam assignment?
Yes.
Or had you volunteered?
No, I was due. I kind of expected to go to Vietnam from the Command General Staff Drill.
Did you expect to be a military intelligence S2 with a line outfit or something like that?
No, most of my background was in signals intelligence, and I expected probably to get a job at something related to
military. Okay, so then Phoenix came as kind of a surprise?
Yeah, I don't know if surprise is the right word, but yeah, I did not expect it from the Phoenix.
Because Phoenix is kind of unusual program anyway.
Yeah.
Did you have any background in training?
Not a whole lot. Like I say, most of my background had been in SIGINT.
Okay. With
I had no background. I had a lot of peripheral background. I had no significant background in the human intelligence or the human skills, per se, as a discipline.
Does SIGINT play a role in Phoenix operations?
If any, very insignificant. Now, I can't say that some of the other organizations have contributed.
Because that's something that was of interest to me, whether Army Security Agency was radio monitoring and then feeding information into the Phoenix Directorate.
No, absolutely not to my knowledge. If there was anything that related to that, it had to be outside of our jobs. It would have been an indirect kind of thing.
Okay. Who did you get the assignment in Washington?
No, after I got to Vietnam.
You got to Vietnam. Okay, that's very usual, is that people get to Vietnam and then they get assigned to Phoenix.
You got to go into a replacement, and then they look around, see what's available.
Were you sent over to the Phoenix Directorate, and there you met John Mason or somebody like that? Is that how the process worked?
I'm not exactly sure how they did that. I don't remember. I don't remember whether he had a choice. It seems to me when I got there, and this is really a vague recollection, that when they looked at what was available in jobs, and somebody said, this is a pretty interesting area, and they're looking for people, and I think, I don't know if they, at that point they might have asked me if I was interested, but once I went over there, I think I was kind of committed to the assignment. I think it was run an interview type thing, best of my recollection.
Who at the Phoenix Directorate then did you if not interview with, but get your orientation from?
Well, my guess is there were three kind of senior people that when I first got there, as I recall. The deputy was Colonel Newman.
Right. Do you know his first name?
James.
Okay.
In fact, before I came over this morning, I went through my file just to have an OER.
He's the one who did the James, filled out your efficiency report. Okay.
And of course, John Mason was his boss. And there was Colonel Reniason.
Yeah, that's a real funny spelling, R-E-I-N-E-I-S-O-N or something.
If you asked me to spell it, I couldn't spell it. But
I think he later went to Saxon.
I'm not sure what Saxon is.
Special Assistant for Covert and Special Activities on the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
I thought he went to Taiwan. I mean, he was kind of a Chinese, that might have been sometime after that. He was kind of a Chinese expert.
Would he have been an executive officer as opposed to a deputy or something like that?
He was kind of the operations guy. Next to Newman, he was kind of the senior guy that seemed to have a lot of influence.
You want to give me just a little bit of insight into their, the three personalities? Had you known any of these people from before?
No, I didn't know any of them. They were all... I really don't have any anecdotes about personalities. It was pretty much of a business relationship that, you know, superior to subordinate.
They were both full colonels.
They, Reniason and Newman were both full colonels. Reniason, I believe, was a long time bachelor. Newman, I'm not sure whether how long Newman had been over there.
Do you know Reniason's first name?
It might come to me, but
okay. What about impressions about John Mason? He's I've interviewed Evan Parker and John Tilton. Mason's in Hawaii. He's the only one that I haven't interviewed. I wrote him a letter, and he said he wasn't interested in talking to me, even though I got a grant to go out to Hawaii to talk to him. Let's see photographs of him.
Yes, John Mason was very, very friendly. But you were never quite sure, I think, whether... Not the right way to put it, whether John was being clever or straightforward with you. In fact, if I would give you one anecdote, if you turn off
the machine. When do you make your first trip down to Vung Tau? Do you have an office down in Vung Tau, or are you in an office in Saigon?
No, I would get down there periodically. In fact, I would get down and usually either open a class or close a class, either make some remarks at the beginning or the end of a class. And I guess the first time, I don't remember the first time I went down, but it was kind of an orientation thing. We were working, school was set up in an old hotel. Shortly after that, we acquired what had been an old service club right on the air base there. And we converted that into kind of a classroom. And I think we might even put the students up there after a while.
In the service club?
Oh, yeah.
Is that a military?
Military thing? Service
okay.
Club, yeah.
Vietnamese.
And games. And, yeah, I'm not sure it was Vietnamese. I think it might have been built by the Americans.
Okay.
Early on.
Okay. So it's not a particularly old building?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't a very extensive building.
Okay. So that's pretty close to the city of Vung Tau? Because there's the city of Vung Tau, and there's the airport, and then there's the training center, right?
Well, we were right on the little airfield is where the service club was, and there was a little hotel, which is, I mean, you're talking, you know, just a matter of a mile or two.
Oh, okay.
You're not talking any great distances, so I can't remember where Vung Tau started, sort of. Seems to me it.
Everybody just says it was a real nice place.
Yeah, it was, I'm sure it was.
Resort area.
Prior to the war, yeah.
Yeah,
so
okay.
It was nice beaches and the old French.
Who was handling the school, who was handling Phoenix training before you came down? Was it somebody of, also a lieutenant colonel, or were you upgrading the position? Was it an upgrading of the position having a lieutenant colonel?
I really don't remember. Reniason might have been involved in it. I can't say that for sure.
Okay. But there were instructors there instructing when you arrived, or did you actually set up the...
No,
the
I didn't program? Set it up. It was already ongoing.
And how big are the classes, and how big of a, you know, how long are the courses and that kind of stuff?
I'm guessing that, and I'm trying to recall, I think that the classes were a couple of weeks. I think the classes were probably anywhere from 15 to 30, 40 folks. Maybe not quite that many. And I'm sure that I don't remember all the things that we might have done to the curriculum, but I'm sure that we adjusted and we added and pulled out, over time.
Okay. And is it mostly lieutenants and captains for DIOCs, or is it also people for
FIOCs? Well, it was sort of a combination. In fact, that paper that you showed me refreshed me a little bit. It was sort of a combination. One, we had the what we called the Fung Wong advisors, people who were actually assigned to advise in the program that went to either the district or province or even region level. And they went through there primarily an orientation type thing. And then there were people who were not directly involved but had jobs that sort of related, and they needed to understand what the Fung Wong program was about.
Like S2s or something like that?
We probably even got a few S2s.
Give me an example? Is it people like National Police Advisors?
National Police Advisors.
Okay, all right. Because I knew a guy named Bill Phillips who was a National Police Advisor, and he said he was one of the few, but he went.
Yeah, I would say that almost anybody had anything to do indirectly with the program, if they had time, they would get down to the motel.
Okay. And if I understand that, the program is basically, what is the VCI?
The program, I think, is, and again, keep emphasizing, I'm going from memory, so I think obviously we taught, one, what we considered the VCI, what the objective of the Fung Wong program was, and then we talked about the basic contributing organizations.
Okay. Yeah.
And what their role was and how they could contribute. And then we went into such things as probably even how to keep certain files and set up files and how to more operational kind of things.
So would you be able to explain to somebody what the difference between the special branch, the MSS, and the CIO are?
Could you explain to me the difference? I didn't teach down there, and I'm not sure that I could right now. I'd have to think about it, and then I'd be speculating as to what I recall special branch.
They're the ones who man the picks and do... I think the record keeping, but there really seems to be a lot of overlap in gray areas.
No, I can't really speak to that with much interest.
Did you have a permanent staff of instructors?
I don't remember how many instructors we had. We didn't have that many instructors. We had a couple, two or three permanent folks.
Military?
Civilian. At one time during my tenure, had a civilian, and then I had a military. I don't remember.
You were deputies, sort of people
to
the school?
Yeah, they were kind of the guys. They worked for me, but they ran the school.
Do you remember their names?
I can't remember the name, but the civilian. It was a major, I believe it was Stevens, but he wasn't there too long. He worked in it. Yeah, he was down in front of him.
And that would just be, those would be basically administrative jobs anyway? Grading people on how they did in class, or was there any kind of grading or?
I don't think we gave a grade. I think we gave tests and so on. And I think it was a pass-fail type thing. I mean, I think everybody passed because I think it was more just more orientation. I don't know.
Okay. How many people could that, either first the hotel and then the service club hold? Was it like enough for 50 people at a time?
The hotel, I think we were somewhat limited. It was a pretty run-down hotel, as I recall. That's when I first got there. I can't give you numbers. I'm saying we could ballpark, I would say, 40.
And then more people at the service.
And then I think we could probably handle classroom size. I think we could handle more out at when we got out at the service club. Okay. I don't remember the building might have been eliminating that.
So the classes were held in the same building where the people were staying? The classes were held at the hotel and then later at the service club?
Well, initially, I think they were held in the hotel. Then, I believe, it was a combination, staying kind of in this old rundown hotel.
And then going over to the
And then I think we moved in the whole thing into the service club. So.
Were the Fung Huang advisors also given instruction in revolutionary development or any of the other kind of programs that were going on at Vung Tau?
I think just the familiarization.
Okay.
Chu Hoi and all those kind of things.
Okay. Because those would be like contributing organizations.
Yeah, that's right. No, they need to, a Fung Huang advisor kind of needed to know what were various possible sources of information.
Okay.
And who would cooperate, who would not. You know, there were some concerns about, you know, we had differences in examples, I recall, with the Chu Hoi.
Okay.
Because they wanted to maintain their credibility and operate in good faith and not be. So
Chu Hoi was not particularly a good source of information.
Well, it could be, you really had to be careful that you know, Chu Hoi wanted to protect their program. They didn't want to say, you know, you come in under the Chu Hoi program, and the first thing you know, you're being interrogated to. Which might turn some people off.
Okay.
From their perspective.
Because everybody who, all the defectors who became Pru and RD people all came through Chu Hoi.
Yeah.
So
you'd get something from some of them, but most of that, I think, was done, and then the information was probably passed into the
So did you travel around the country?
I traveled, a good bit, out to various districts, provinces, regions.
And for the purpose of getting feedback on how well the program training had prepared people for their job?
And to get a better understanding of the needs and the shortcomings out there that we needed to either teach or learn more about.
So what on those two points, how well was the training succeeding, and what were the things that needed to be corrected?
Yeah, I think from a training standpoint, I don't think that it wasn't that complicated.
Right.
And I don't think that I don't think we had that many shortcomings and training program per se. I think it was, and I didn't think about it necessarily at the time, but I think it really had to do with the relationship among people and the question of trust out in the various districts and regions.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fung Huang advisor's job was to try to promote that.
Yeah.
And it was really kind of his job was to make sure that all these different officials in a district were sort of pooling their information.
So just like anybody else involved in the advisory program, if the province chief was a problem, the program was bad.
If he's a crook, he play games with you, and you get out and you find some. Mm-hmm. They were doing that, and, you know, that typical frustrations of Vietnam.
Okay.
You know, a lot of them didn't work in the afternoon. They had other things that they did in the afternoon. And you know, people used to say, well, you know, if you had war going on for 20 years, you
take the afternoon off too.
You'd be casual about it, I guess. So my response was, if they go after it full time, they might not have a 20-year war.
Yeah, the mirror image sometimes.
A lot of them had businesses, and, or I guess they could be called businesses.
Was there upgraded training for province above, over province Phong Hong people over district and region above province? You know, was there some difference in the training, segregation in the classes?
No, I don't think so. I don't recall us doing that. I think it was a pretty pretty standard all the way through. Now, on a one-on-one basis, it might get into some things, but it was not, the course was not structured, as I recall, such that say, okay, now we finished the core curriculum. Now everybody's going to go to a region over here. Everybody's going to district.
Okay.
Over here, kind of thing.
Did when your people went out into the field at a region level, your region Phoenix people, did they have to report to the ROIC, the region CIA region officer in charge?
So I'm not sure I understand the question. When,
okay.
When the people from
your
the
Phoenix region advisors,
right?
Okay, would go into a region to take charge of the Phoenix program. But they reporting not, you know, there's the CORD person, and then there's, you know, who's the CORD region person, like 3 CORD, I guess it would be John Van or whatever one he was in.
Yeah.
Then he would have a region Phoenix deputy, but then there's also the CIA region person. Is there,
the regional, see, the district advisors and the region advisors, as I recall, did not work for, in the Phung Wong structure, per se. In other words, the Phung Wong district advisor, or the Phung Wong advisor at district, he worked for the district advisor as opposed to working for the Phung Wong advisor at the next higher level.
Yeah, he worked for the district senior advisor.
That's right.
Okay.
And same way at region. The regional guys worked for the, whatever we call the senior guy in the region, the MacCord's guy in the region.
Okay.
And we didn't, we never really talked in terms of Army or CIA or anybody else. Obviously, there were some people that had ties to CIA, but a lot of the regional Phung Wong advisors, in fact, maybe all of them were, I think they were Army colonels.
Yeah.
Both colonels.
Did you know David Luckett, Colonel David Luckett?
Luckett.
Okay.
What time was it?
Well, that's what I'm trying to. he wrote a paper which was given to me, and on Phung Wong training. So I just tried to find David L. Luckett.
No,
might have been a major. Okay.
Yeah, he might have been a Luckett.
Do you remember who the region guys were? You. Do you know who was your region Phoenix guy in 2 Corps?
Like, I can't remember the names.
Okay. Was Millett there while you were there?
No, he was. I know of Millett. He was, but I didn't realize he was in the Phung Wong program.
I did talk with him.
Yeah, he was up at Devon's at one time.
Yeah. Yeah, he talked about that with me, because, I
don't know him, but he's fairly well known because he won the Medal of Honor.
His mustache.
And when he left the Army, he wrote a letter to the Army Times that sort of was not a very good letter.
Mm-hmm.
One of these. I'm leaving the Army's not what it used to be. But he was a hero.
Yeah. Okay. When you said region, did you also mean province, district, province, and region? Or is there is the province guy a little bit, is he in a different relationship?
Region.
This,
you know, no, province, same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, you work for the province senior advisor.
People tell me that that was one of the big problems with Phoenix, is that everybody had two bosses. That there was the Phoenix advisor, Fong Hung advisor, was always in a bind between two people, and it's the same with anybody who was in Cords. You had your Cords person writing your efficiency report, but then within your own service you had a chain of command, and quite often there's an operational boss and an administrative boss, and that resulted in a tug of war. Is that a problem with Phoenix? It might have been.
I never sensed that, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
Now, there's no question. One of the problems, and obviously, at least in the Army, I can tell you that your loyalty tends to go to the guy that rates you. Now, so that means that if you've got a Fong Hung advisor at district level,
mm-hmm.
he's pretty much going to be driven by what that district senior advisor wants to do. And if that district senior advisor is a gung-ho guy that says, hey, they aren't doing all that crap, he's going to jump right on that kind of a bandwagon.
Okay.
And in fact, we had guys, and I can't remember the names, but we had people that, they really want to go out on operations, and they wanted to, mm-hmm. Be more infantry in the infantry. That wasn't their job.
Yep. Okay.
But it was popular with their district senior advisor, and that's what he wanted, and that's the way they would operate.
But let's say a guy's a Fong Hung province advisor. Now, the guy who's doing his efficiency report is the province senior advisor.
I think so.
Whether he's a military man or a civilian.
I think so.
Or his deputy.
Mm-hmm.
Because lots of times I've heard mm-hmm. the province senior advisor left a lot of his responsibilities to his deputy.
It might depend on the ranks and personalities.
They did the thing with one guy's military, one civilian.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, his region, the Phoenix region advisor, is coming by and giving him direction. Is that the way it works, or not really
direction?
Because then what is the purpose of the region Phoenix guy?
It's really more of a technical advice and assistance,
okay.
as opposed to saying, giving them any authoritative direction. Now, we could certainly, it's really more of a technical advice than being in charge.
Okay.
Because there's no way that the Fong Hung channel, the people in that channel, could give direction other than maybe format, or this is what we like to see in reports,
okay.
or something.
Okay.
There's no way that you could tell them that this is the way that you what you ought to be doing tomorrow, and this is what you should do next week.
Okay.
Because each district was different. Some, and each province, there were some mm-hmm. things just absolutely were not doable.
In
some areas, because of the personalities of the Vietnamese, as well as the Americans. So.
Okay, but you understand the problem that I was.
But I'm not sure that that might have been a problem of some degree to some people, but I don't see it as I never recall that as being. If we could ever overcome that, we could really do a lot better.
Okay. How long were you there? Were you there for a year?
I was there just under a year. My brother got killed, and I went back on emergency leave, and I didn't have enough time to go back. He had to have either 30 or 60 days left. So I was there.
Nothing there. Did someone replace you? Would you have known who your replacement was?
federal woman to replace me.
Okay.
And I left suddenly. And
was your brother's death related to Vietnam?
No, he was killed on the mobilizer back here in the States. In fact, as a matter of fact, I was in Taiwan on R&R when I got the word that he got killed. And I think I went back to Vietnam, got my stuff.
And that was it.
Yeah, and I don't know how long I've been in Taiwan. I went to Taiwan because I was going to be assigned there after the end of the tour. I wanted to check out some things.
What was your assignment after Phoenix?
Commanded a field station. Singing. I just assume you don't put that in.
Yeah, no, I know the signals intelligence is steeped in secrecy much more than
that's not really classified, but it's just the idea that, you know, if it's in writing, there's always somebody that says, gee, you know, he's
make a connection here.
Well, I don't, it's just the idea that somebody might, quite frankly, might feel that I'm in security clearance or something. I'm still doing things that I don't want to be too loose on.
Can we talk a little bit more about the organization of the Phoenix staff itself in Saigon?
Okay.
How big a staff was it? Do you know, and how much of your time is divided between the staff and between the field operations training included in that?
Well, okay, I would say there was, I have to think a minute and try to mentally count up here. I would say that the Phoenix Fung Wong director, there might have been 20, give or take half a dozen, but and some of those were admin.
Okay.
It wasn't very big yet.
And it's in Cords building.
It was in the I think we call it Cords 2.
Okay.
Now, there was a, of course, the director of the deputy ops training.
Deputy and ops being two different things.
Yeah, ops was what for us. Yeah. And under ops, they had a lot of the direct liaison with the police.
Okay.
They did a lot of the work with the headquarters.
Okay. So there might have been like 5 or 6 people in ops and operations?
Yeah, at least. Okay. So that was the biggest element. And then there was a small logistics support.
And that's if some province guy needs helicopters or jeeps, he makes a request through them?
No, I think it was mostly, you know, headquarters kind of logistics kind of things, and they might have helped out a little bit in coordination, but I think they got a big part of that support. I think they got primarily from the region and the province or district. I know we had some, as an example, we had the green police chiefs that we were assigned to us, and I think they, that's probably depending on maybe where they were. Of course, they didn't have those out in the district so much.
What were those?
What we call the green police chiefs.
Oh, okay.
Like a jeep only. I mean, it was a jeep, but it was painted green.
Okay.
As far as the time out in the field percentage, if you kept now, and this varied from element to element, I would say, you know, from my perspective, I let's say, about a third to a half was out in the field, maybe a little less than a half.
Including at Bonetown.
Including, because it's the Bonetown, which was probably the biggest.
Okay.
It wouldn't even be close to even a third, probably, if it weren't for the business of Bonetown. But I probably spent, it wasn't unusual to spend 2 days a week at Bonetown, maybe a day to 2 days. Because I would get down to open a class and I'd listen in on some of the classes, or I would get out for the graduation and I'd get down a little early and see what was going on.
Was there a report section in the Phoenix staff apart from, or would that be under operations?
Probably under operations, I don't recall. That might have been, though.
Because did all the district and, were copies of all district and province and region reports sent to the directorate?
I don't know that either. Okay. You know, if they were, they would have gone through ops and from a training standpoint.
Yeah, you would have. Okay. What about there was a Feng Huang monthly newsletter and stuff like that supposedly came out of the directorate?
I have a vague recollection of that. I'm sure we contributed to it. Little lessons learned from...
Helpful for each other.
And that's one of the things that we would also get out of the school down at Bonetown, depending on how long people, because we had some people who had been out in the field for a while, and then they would come in, and we had a lot of guest lecturers and all that. You know.
Yeah, I talked to some of the district guys, said that if they had been there for a couple of months, they'd be sent down to the school as facilitators.
Yeah.
Is that the right word?
That's right. Now that you mentioned it, I forgot that word. I guess that's right. Because a lot of it was seminar type discussion.
Okay. Did you develop any relations with any of the province or region or district people? Was it the kind of thing that...
You mean the Vietnamese or the...
Vietnamese or Americans.
Well, some of the Americans, there was you would get to know some better than others, but not really, certainly any lasting. Some of the guys that were in the headquarters area, still know.
So there are some.
But I can't remember the names of some of the guys, or most guys out in the regions.
Okay.
The names will come back very quickly. I can picture some of the guys. But I think the whole, we had periodic regional. We brought in all the senior guys. Forgot how often we did that.
Was there a Colonel Egger? Do you remember Colonel Egger? Mm-hmm. Was he engineer? Do you know? I've had a hard time.
Egger.
Three Corps.
I don't remember what his branch was. But I remember the name Egger. I can't even picture the guy. Is he a colonel, lieutenant colonel?
Full crew. I think he was an older fellow, even at the time. I think he was an older fellow, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. I picture one guy.
So they'd come right to the director.
They'd come in, and we'd have a big, one or two day session.
And would that be for policy, or
policy talk about? Lessons learned, problems, that kind of thing.
Okay.
What did they need from us? Really an exchange of ideas. So.
And is there anything that comes out of that we haven't discussed at this point?
No, I can't. I can't think of anything.
Was there a morale in the, or a kind of a, any kind of unity of people in the Phoenix Directorate? Was it, there's a problems with the program at that time. Are people affected by the problems?
No, I think morale, consider being in Vietnam, I think overall the morale was pretty good.
Because the whole Vietnam War at that time was a morale problem.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whatever, however that affected people, I guess the Phung Long program per se, we didn't have much bearing on.
Okay.
Morale was, you know, was more probably affected by what everyone thought about what was going on over there.
Okay.
I think that at least when I was there, the camaraderie among, especially the military guys that were working in Saigon was good.
Okay.
I think everybody seemed to get along pretty well and we'd go off and do things together. And it was, you know, really no problems. I can't think of any.
There was a when Phoenix was originally formed, it was called ISEX.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I might have known it at one time. I forgot.
And ISEX was supposed to be a command, a general staff for counterinsurgency, which was reporting right to Comer, and then later Colby. Eventually. It starts out as almost equal in importance to Cords, and then later is absorbed into Cords and becomes a directorate. But at first, it is the focal point for the counterinsurgency, culmination of a development of a bunch of different programs. At the head of, as an advisory board of directors to the Phoenix staff, there's what's called a Phoenix Committee, which includes the MACV J2, J3, Chief of Station, agency RD guy, and they report directly to either Comer, Colby, or later Wayne. Did you have any understanding of that committee? Did that committee ever meet, or did you ever brief that committee?
I'm not even aware that they had that committee.
Okay.
I didn't know that J2 got involved at all.
Yeah. Well, supposedly they met once in the history of Phoenix, and that was when it was formed. And then after then, they left it up purely to Comer, Colby, or Wayham, I guess.
They brought in General Forrester as kind of a deputy to maybe to Jacobson.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
That's right.
But it was never totally clear to me what his role was. I mean, he was sort of an extra guy that sort of assistant up there. He came over and we briefed him, but he never really, at least the time I was there, he didn't seem to get terribly involved.
I guess what I'm driving at is where's the supervision for the Phoenix staff from above? Is it strictly
my feeling was that this is my impression, and I don't necessarily know this to give back, but my impression was that John Mason, Tilton, worked primarily for Colby, perhaps through Jacobson, and that there was a close relationship with the chief of station.
Okay.
And, you know, it was sort of like, I kind of looked at chief of station sitting over there as sort of a co-equal basis, you know, John Mason and Tilton, and this guy obviously had a professional relationship. And obviously the chief of station in their business was a senior guy that you know, you certainly pay attention to, just as if I were working for John Mason, a civilian, and there's a three-star general over in NACB that wants to make sure that I'm not going to tell him something that I'm not supposed to.